Blog Talk Radio.
Mother's Medicine Cabinet. This is your host, Frank Reardon. Your Mother's Medicine Cabinet is brought to you by those fine folks at the Literary Underground, all 100,000 of them. Tonight, writer April Bratton, and she is live on the other side of the house with two coconuts and a string in between, kind of like Gilligan's Island. So we're just going to bring her on and hope there's no Hendrix-style feedback. April.
Yes.
Okay. You're live from the bathroom or wherever you are.
I am. I can actually see the toilet right now. It's
so
gorgeous, by the way.
Yeah. So how's it going out there in Minot, North Dakota?
It's going pretty good. You know, how have you been? I haven't seen you since the 80s, man. Where you been?
I've been on the other side of the house since 1982.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So anyways, why don't you just get into it and tell the audience about your two upcoming releases and what they're called and all that.
Okay. Well, I have a chapbook coming out really soon. from Maverick Duck Press, which is run by Kendall Ashley Bell, and that is called Raw Dogs and Other Metaphors. And then after that, I have a full-length coming out called It Broke Anyway, which will be out on Neo Poesis Press, run by the fabulous Dale Winslow, who you know very well.
Yeah.
And so, that's what I've got.
So how long have you been writing the word? How did it all come about for you? Why don't you tell the audience? I mean, I might know this stuff, but the rest of the listening world doesn't know.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I guess I started writing really shitty poetry when I was like 14-ish. And I hadn't actually really read any poetry at that point. So I'm sure you can realize how bad it really was. But as I started to get older, I started reading more and started taking the writing a little bit more seriously. And so I guess I've been writing seriously since, I want to say, about 18 years old. So it's been about 11 years, 12 years.
Okay.
Shit, I'm almost 30. But, yeah.
Welcome to the club, the 30-something. Many of us.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I heard that 30-something is when it really starts to happen for a lot of writers. So I'm hoping that my writing will get much better.
I think it, my personal view, yours might be different, that the writing gets better or worse. I mean, myself, for example, I'll write bad and good, like, throughout my entire life that I've been writing. And I'm sure that you write bad and good, too. I mean, nobody writes amazingly good their entire life. I mean, what's your view upon that?
Yeah. No, I write plenty of really terrible poems that never see the light of day. But I think that as you get older, you start to get a clearer head about it all. And I think that just comes with the wisdom of age. And so as a writer, it's only a great thing to continue to get older and to continue to learn.
So why don't you give us one of your poems from whenever the hell you want to give it. It could be from your books or any kind of poems you want.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start out with the title poem from the book that's coming out on Neo Poesis Press. It's called It Broke Anyway, and it's about my grandmother. When she went, I was the absurdity of a glass slipping from my hands to a sink, and it broke anyway. She knew, and she knew what she did not want, to become the body stewing, molding, in the eyes of the vibrant. Let me tell you something. That woman had no use for canes or any other walking device. She kept her own legs useful until that cancer began to roughly overtake and eat, eat, eat. What and how goes that nightly oxygen tank? The tool, a breathing mechanism that gave her the life for one more fuck off and fuck you to the world. Does that mass of wires and tubes, that big machine, shift in a corner cobwebby somewhere? How old, old, old. My grandmother had no time for old. No matter how her face crinkled or her days folded like an apron around her middle. For a touch of that certain type of wrinkled, I will never forget nor tire. And to think I had once called for a formal undressing of my grandmother's stays. How unnecessary, because stay she will, in the kneaded rounds of his face, in the wagging fingers of their children, and in the trust I have welcomed into my own organs. That was one hell of a swaddle deathbed, and she should have never been denied that whiskey. If I could take it back, I would have held it on her tongue for a second longer than her death had taken her.
Wow. You know what I've always liked about your writing the most was, if you know like what words, you have a good command of what words not to put in and what words, you know, what words to leave out, basically. I mean, I don't know when you're on the other side of the wall in your writing area, you know, I don't ever bother you. So I don't know if you like do they go through a lot of edits ever, or is it just, like, come out very natural for you?
Well, when I first started writing, there was, I feel, too many edits. Now I feel like I pretty much just get it all out, and then I go back and look at it again. And that's when I might substitute some words that I feel are stronger, or I might take some parts out that I don't feel are that important. But mostly it's really not too much editing. It's just kind of nitpicking, mostly. I don't know, like when I'm ready to write, I'm ready to write, and it comes out, and I really don't have to do too much to the product to make it finished.
So I'm just going to start off this question that I ask everybody, and I'm sure you know what question I'm coming up with, to kind of steer the conversation in a different way. Do you believe, what is your view on the internet with the writing world? It's the one question that I ask everybody. Do you believe that it's got more positives or more negatives? Do you believe that it dilutes the talent pool? You know, what's your view, personally?
I guess I feel a very personal connection to this question, actually, because without the internet, I wouldn't have met some of my greatest friends in the writing world. I wouldn't have met you, Frank, without it. And I don't know, I think it's very important for networking in particular. You know, I've met a lot of great, amazing modern writers this way. And I mean, of course it dilutes the talent pool. You read all kinds of shitty poems all over Facebook every single day you go on there. But without that, I wouldn't have met a lot of amazing writers. I wouldn't know about their work. I wouldn't have been able to buy their books because I wouldn't have known about it. And so I think it's really good for the networking and for getting the word out there that they have books. And I don't know. And it's also great for publishing as well. There's a lot of, I mean, I found all the places I've been publishing by looking on the internet to see what was out there. And also my own journal is online. So I think it's mostly a positive. I think that the only negative is having to read things that you don't necessarily want to read. You have to kind of cut through the shit to get to the really good stuff. But I think it is a positive.
Because I know that you got a strong sensibility for the writing. We've discussed it many times. Do you believe that all poems are good poems and everybody could be a writer if they wanted to be? Or do you believe that some people have it and some don't? Without, you know, just your opinion, you don't got to like get too into it.
I think there's definitely very shitty poems that it should have never reached my eyes. And I don't think that anyone can be a writer. I think that it's a really hard thing to be a writer. And it takes a lot of guts, and it takes a lot of fuck yous to the world to be a writer, and a lot of people cannot do that. But I think under it all, it does take talent. Like, you know, I don't think that anybody can step up to the plate and hit a home run, you know? It takes that talent to be able to do something with it. And I have read plenty of people as both an editor and just as a reader who are terrible. And I just want to say, you know, I mean, it's hard to discourage young writers, but when you get the writers who are like, oh, I have my PhD in English literature, and oh, I have, you know, all these credits, and I look at them and they've been writing for 30 years and it's terrible, I just want to say, I don't want to read this. No, it's not good.
Yeah. I find it a very hard thing because no one ever discouraged me as, well, I started later in life in my 20s, though I always wrote all my life, but, you know, took it seriously in my 20s, that, you know, it was bad. It was pretty bad at the time, and I wouldn't let anybody discourage me. I would never try to discourage a young writer, but like you said,
no, me
like,
either.
The people, like, at it for years and years and years, and eventually it's, you know, it's like me trying to be center for the Boston Celtics. It's not going to happen. Like, so why don't you give us another one of your awesome poems from anything you want?
Okay. Let's see. What do I feel like reading? Okay. This one's called Left. He would leave these items on the table. Three small castles of cheap, empty beer cans, one plastic spit cup, and a single deck of cards scattered angrily, molested by the hands of his man friends, the kitchen full with their ghosts. I would clean up the mess and wonder how I got there. He would slobber into the bedroom like a sick dog, his weak back crouched over, his hands extended like a drunk puppet to drag me out of bed by the ankles, to tell me how I was not allowed to divorce him. And I would believe him with my little shake-shake of obedient tail. I would watch the sun creep up, a quiet, gentle girl, and wonder why I stayed there. I would beg to take a shower at 5 a.m. after listening to him rant all night about aliens and Indians and mountains and God and Big Bang conspiracies, and I would let the water pound my back. The tears, fresh and natural, would not come. The sun would judge me from the sky, and I just let her. The night came back quickly enough and settled around the house like a sweet baby in a blanket as I yanked all the fuses from the box, threw them into the yard with the rumbling of missiles, and set my feet in that blast of leaving grass. The moon saw me, and she just nodded her head.
Well, I have a question. I never really get too much into the poems. I basically, you know, set up this show because, you know, there's just writing out there that I admire. And but anyways, and damn you for the naturalize. people that inspire you. You're not as outspoken as like a big mouth like I am. But who are some of the dead or elder like writers that have always influenced you throughout your life?
Huh. Well, I think there's kind of a stigma that comes with this name, but I was basically introduced to poetry by Sylvia Plath, and I think it's especially a stigma with female writers to say that name, but she was kind of my gateway drug, and I love Frank O'Hara and Richard Brautigan and Anne Sexton and, I don't know, so many writers. And, you know, I have to thank you, Frank, for bringing such an enormous library into our house. We have so many books and there's so many things to choose from that when I want to, I can just go out and get anything, Creeley, Bukowski, Perkoff, all kinds of writers. But I'm more of a person who just kind of dabbles in different people, and I like to try to read as many people as I can and kind of try to get a feel for what they were about. Harold Norse, there's lots of different people. I mean, the list can go on and on.
And who are some of your favorite contemporary writers that, you know, you would consider colleagues, like any, like the people that just really do it for you?
Well, some of them are so good that I wouldn't necessarily consider them colleagues, but
you know what I mean. I don't know what word.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, Scott Wahlberg was amazing. And I have to give a shout out to Mike Taylor, too, who is also just so brilliant in his simplicity. I love your work. I love Jason Hardung. Stephanie Bryant Anderson is wonderful. I don't know. It's hard on the spot, Frank.
I know.
John Dorsey. I love John Dorsey. And I'm currently reading his Leaves of Ass from Unadorned Press, and it's really good.
Well, I've got like so many questions for you that I might know the answers to, but the listening audience doesn't hear from you as much as, say, other people, and just curious to know what's out there that moves you. And you're very, like I was, like a lot of your, or I was at one time, your poetry can be very prose influenced. Like, you read a lot of prose writers.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I do.
Okay. Oh, and by the way,
I think that I've kind of leaned more toward narrative lately, and it might be because of all the prose writers I'm reading, but yeah.
So just so the listen audience knows, there's 25 minutes in the show. Feel free to call in if you would like and shoot shit with April Bratton or ask her a question or whatever you'd like, or harass her if you want to call in. But why don't you give us another poem?
Okay. All right. This one's called Balls. I know a thing or two about scrotum. There are men who pretend to have one, filling their little flaps with jelly. There are men who actually hate their own, folding them in their laps like paper. And then there are the men who pay too much attention to them, puffing, feeling, tugging at skin and hair. And I tell you, it's just flesh. I once touched a pair that was as rough as sandpaper, and it surprised me because I thought all manhood was made to slide like velvet down a woman's hardened skin.
Yes. There are many men who enjoy their balls. It makes me think, I'm sorry, but it really does instantly make me think of the AC/DC's We've Got Big Balls song. But
well, I've never heard that.
Yeah, it's just a song that my uncles used to play when I was a kid. When I actually thought the song was about people going to the ball. But So as we continue to drink your awesome tall boys of natural ice, which have buzzed me the shit out.
I told you. I warned you.
Where can people get a hold of, like, any material? I mean, you've got stuff coming out, but you don't know the exact date. But where can they read you while they're waiting for the stuff to come out? Or, you know, whatever. Where can they get a hold of your shit? They don't even need to, where can they get your books when they come out?
Maverick Duck Press, which you can just Google it and it'll come right up, and Neo-Poesis Press, which you can Google and that'll come up. If you can spell it, because, frankly, I have a hard time spelling it. But
Neo-Poesis Press?
I think if you put Neo-Poesis Press and attempt to spell it, I'm pretty sure it'll come right up on your Google.
I tell you, I've had a book with them for years, and I got a new one coming out in the fall, and I still cannot spell it correctly.
Well, I got published in this little blog, like, a few weeks ago, and I accidentally spelled Neo-Poesis wrong, and then I felt really bad about it. It was in my bio, and I felt really bad because I spelled it wrong. I usually try to make a point to make sure I put enough I's and put the E in the right place, but yeah. It's hard.
So how did it come about with Dale Winslow? How did your project come about?
Well, I just sent in a manuscript, and it took her quite a while to read it. I want to say it was about a year to read my manuscript, but I was just really dead set on having my first full length come out there, and I hadn't submitted my manuscript to anybody else, and I love the quality of their books. I mean, they're beautiful, the books that she makes, and I know that she's just a really great editor who's just trying to do the best for the writer.
I try to get her on the show, but she denied, of course, because she doesn't like to talk on the shows. But her quality of books is really good. The binding is great. The covers are great. All the stuff inside. I was really impressed. You know, there's a couple other presses out there like Lummix and stuff that do real excellent books too. I mean, there's no like staples in it at all. But I know there's a million presses that neither one of us, probably not a million, but a good hand that neither one of us have heard of that probably do good books too. So yeah, you got that coming out with them. And so why don't you give us a poem
from that?
And then
the little, huh?
Why don't you give us a poem from the Neo Places book? I know you have already, but why don't you give us another one?
All right, I'll give you another one. This is another kind of shorter one. It's called Whistling. There is a sly whistling in the hallway. It keeps on like some insane trapped bird. And each night I can hear my name screeching out from in between filthy teeth, a hollowed mechanical music of a dying animal. It will not be consoled with milk or with water, and it will not take the bread. It just rattles in the hall, its veins thrusting blue in persistence. Tonight, its volume rises like a siren, and it pecks and peels at the broken wood of my door. I stand on the other side, an obscene object of light, my arms a bridge, and I will not let it enter, because another death inside this place would flood my walls of their stone and take away the light.
That one was really good. I think that, like, a lot of people, like, outside the Boston reading where you met a few people, a lot of people don't see the process that you do that I see often or that I understand of yours, which ours is completely different in many ways. We write at opposite times of the day. We write differently. We find influence differently. But your stuff is so whereas in, like, you know, it's just so tight. It's very tight, and it knows where to go, and it leads perfectly. And I've always admired that about your writing, where, like, you know, I don't know, like, I don't want to knock anybody. Myself, I'll just knock myself. That, like, mine can be all over the place at times, when yours is just, like, so compact and tight, and it gets to the point, and I really admire that. I don't know. That's the way I feel. How do you feel about it all? Do you have, like, a process or anything, or is it just whatever, I sit at my keyboard?
It's pretty much whatever, I sit at my keyboard, but it gets hard when at the end of a work day and you're fucking exhausted. And, I mean, you know, I watch preschool children all day long. And I come home, and oftentimes I don't really feel like writing. So I do a lot of my writing on the weekends when I have lots of time, and I don't know. I feel like lately I feel I have to write in the morning when I first wake up, or afternoon, as it might be sometimes. But I feel like it's the first thing I have to do when I wake up. And if I don't get to do it, then I can be kind of cranky throughout the day, which I think you've seen a couple times. But
that's why I write in the morning, I think. I think that for me, I know everybody's process is differently, apparently for you too, that my mind is most active. It swells the feet. My mind is most active. And I don't know if it's from dreams, or even though I don't write about dreams, I don't know if it's like your mind is so active when you're sleeping, you know. I don't know, I could be completely wrong and completely full of shit right now, but
I write at night too, though, which is something that's pretty rare for you, I've noticed. But I can write at night too sometimes after a few beers, but I don't know, I can't write completely drunk anymore. I just have to have that right level of buzzed, and I can write. But
yeah, I've noticed that there's very few people that can really. I mean, that's when I was drunk, where I'd write a lot, and I would end up saying to myself, I thought it was genius until I woke up the next morning. You know, And then I realized that I just can't do it. I can never do it. I can't drink alcohol and write without it sounding completely retarded, you know. So I don't know.
Well, like,
but
I've told you before, one of your favorite poems from me, like Ekmek with Dirty Hands, I was so drunk when I wrote that I actually passed out at the desk with my head, like, on the desk. And I woke up a couple hours later and finished the poem. Like,
so why don't you give us that poem? You got it?
Yeah, I got it. All right, I'll read it. Like Ekmek with Dirty Hands. I was as clear as her rows of shining glass, tall bottles stashed under her sink. I remember the day my name became vodka in another country, how she dared me to grip the bottle with little pale fists, and I knew I would collapse and crawl inside the damage of a thirst. I was still fresh then, grown from the fronts of planes and the backs of cars. I had never heard the sweeping of a different kind of gunfire, had never heard the rage of a woman banging her fists against cement floors. I thought myself noble, crunching snails with my bare feet, holding geckos in the sunburn of my palm, letting them roast in the deadly of my heat. I miss Ghoul's hair, the way her mouth formed my name on a hardened tongue. I used to watch her read backwards from books. Her fat nose was a brown weapon, and her covered legs a chai wonder. I would wait to touch the bells of her yard, sing Ghoul, 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 until her head sprouted from the other side of the wall, pinked, and I would wonder where her tenacity came from, the ability to hold the man without want, obligation piling her tough skin. She was like a mother, and I dreamed of her placenta with me nestled inside. But she squatted over holes and took the backhanded slap of men, men, men. She smelled of grease and tomatoes, and when language failed us, we would just smile, teeth showing, gnawing at the differences of choice and chance. White girl, she does not remember you. Her paper napkins are collecting themselves on a shelf somewhere she used to call home. I hide my crosses, bury my peaches inside the dried up earth because I was born from the desert instead, where water only comes from bottles and milk from boxes. I still live for the hope of water, but when my organs shrink down to their exactness, I will be savagely torn from the whole, like Ekmek with Dirty Hands.
Yeah, I love that poem. I've always loved it. The first time I heard it, I was just like, damn. I must have heard it like 6 or 7 times to read it now. And it's just, I never tire of it. It's like, it makes me think you're the real deal. And it's just, I don't know. I like it. I like to know that in this house, there's like two opposite, complete opposite, like, directions of writing, and it's just the yours is just like so much more tighter and so much more real, and there's like just like completely two different avenues, and I don't know, I like the way yours goes.
Thanks.
Wow, no more after that, huh? I was just trying to like start a conversation for the listeners, but we've got a caller. And it's a 508, and that makes me think it's New England. So hold on.
Okay.
You're live with April Bratton.
Hi, Frank. Jeff Santolo. I've called in a couple of times for the last shows. You're doing a great job, and I love that you opened with the band. Nice, nice.
Love the band.
Yeah. Oh, God, love them. I just wanted to say, April, you have a wonderful command of inventive metaphors. Very, very impressive. You know, unexpected metaphors. Very, very unique. And I've asked this of the last few poets, Dan Provost and I think Misty Rainwater. And I was just going to ask, was curious to know if you considered experimenting with any types of specific forms. I know me and Frank were talking about this, I think, with Dan. I'm not talking about the sonnets like How Art Thou, Romeo, or anything like that, but more like the Berrigan-style sonnet, etc. Have you ever considered going into form, experimenting?
Well, I have written a lot of form poems, mostly because of school. Because I got my BA degree in English. So, of course, I was forced to write a lot of form poems. And honestly, in my own writing, like for myself, I don't write in form. But I did have some success with one of my form poems that I did have to write for school, which was a, let's see if I can say it right, Ghazal? Ghazal?
Oh, Ghazal, like, yeah, sure, yeah.
Yeah, it was published in the Southeast Review. And I actually really like that poem, but it's really the only form poem that I have ever liked, that I have ever written. I just don't think I respond very well to the limits of form.
So that was,
I don't know.
You were very thumbs up for the, like, William Carlos Williams all the way up until now notion of plain spoken language, so to speak, but both poetics but free verse. You're more into that. Is that kind of your thing? Or?
I'm definitely way more into free verse. I think I just feel too much pressure when trying to write in a form. That writing just, for me, it has to come very naturally. And when I feel like I have to fit it into a certain format, it gets me all flustered, and then it becomes really crappy, so I can't do it. But
oh, yeah. Well, you got a wonderful voice, so it's fine. I mean, your free verse is fantastic. I just like to bring it up to individual poets, and I only bring it up for the sake of creativity, in the sense that it forces you to be creative by boxing you in with limitations. And it takes a passion, at least that I've found, a free verse, which can be a complete passion that can overwhelm you, and you can kind of trim it down to the barest bones that you can. And I don't mean to follow the conventions of all the forms, but to be experimental with the forms. And,
well, yeah.
Sorry, Frank. But.
I would have to agree with what you're saying. I personally, like I said on the Dan show, that 90% of what I do also is free verse, because I agree with April here. But yet, then I read something like Berryman's Dream Songs, which is what, 200 to 300 pages of just 14 lines every single poem. Was it 14 or 16? I can't remember. But
14, yeah, exactly.
Every single poem is 14 lines, and I would have to say that 90% of those poems are utter brilliance. Like, I'm blown away. And the same thing with Berrigan when he did his sonnets are just utterly brilliant.
And Edna's St. Vincent Millay was a genius at it.
Yeah. Very good, yeah.
But I agree with you, because you don't have to, like when Berrigan sonnets, it's all free verse, way, utter language, but yet in a form of a sonnet. It doesn't mean that I still don't really like the sonnet, but when I read Berrigan sonnets, I'm like, man, these are pretty damn good. Like, I don't know. That's just how I feel.
I agree with you completely. I mean, Berrigan, the way he took, 14 lines, he basically was taking one line as being its own thought in and of itself, and he took the time structure of a sonnet and basically made it more 20th century, if you will, in the sense of like an Einstein way, in a time and space, that there's no, it's an illusion. So he took the whole form of a sonnet, which is supposed to be a monument in time, and basically said, I'm just going to give you 15 lines of time all scrambled up, And I really, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Time strain. But the Berryman Dream Songs, I remember that Carter Monroe, he called me an exceptional poet, but I wish I could. So he called me one night. He said, you need to read Berryman's Dream Songs. You're going to go crazy. And I went out and I got it and I read it, and I think my damn head exploded. But anyways, I do have.
But he makes them so natural. And I think
that's
what makes them so good, is that they're just 14 natural.
Lines. 14 lines or whatever it is on 300 different damn poems. I don't know how many damn poems are in that book, but there's a lot of them, man.
Yeah. It sure is.
Amount of lines.
Well, great job, guys.
All right. Yeah, it was a pleasure to call in again. I got 5 minutes left, so I'm trying to get in her another poem from her.
Thank you very much.
All right. It was good to hear from Jeff again, and his I like his form questions. But we got 5 minutes left, so why don't you give us another poem, and then we'll talk it out till the end.
Okay. This one's called Happy Joe. I was a mixture of cracked yellow brick and severed limbs, paint and crashed fences, femur and scapula, raw meat. We would take to the floor of abandoned apartment buildings, touch hair and play with bottles of glue and motor oil, beer cans and salt water. I was 19. I knew everything about vodka and the shoulders of boys. You like that. The first time you came on my tits, your eyes parted like bluebirds leaving the ground. Tell me what you want. Your balls pressed my thigh. I wanted more. The snow fell in the trees like hammers waiting to ice us down. Now you are married. Now you go hunting and play with your dogs. I bet your hands are still the same. I bet you taste exactly the same.
That's what I think, what I've always tried to say for 3 damn years now, that Jeffrey said so easily, that like you have these like brilliant metaphors that are so unexpected. And, you know, I'll be reading a poem, it'll be really, really good, and then you'll just say this thing that will send me for a loop. And, I don't know, the whole bluebird thing on the tips was an exceptionally great section of. Do you have any time when these coming out?
What? You're cutting up.
Oh, do you know when these books of yours are coming out?
Oh, no, not really.
Great help.
I guess
it's a great help.
That's kind of the way that's kind of the way it goes with small press sometimes, I think, you know, just kind of whenever it happens. The one from Maverick Duck, the little chapbook, I think it's going to be about 25 pages, staple chap. It was supposed to be out around this week, so I'm hoping by like next week or the week after it'll come out. And I wasn't really told by Dale when It Broke Anyway will be out, but I'm thinking it's going to be late summer, early fall. So I just have some rough estimates of when they're coming out.
Excellent. So I think you should be looking out for these books, It Broke Anyway from Neil and Gracie's Press, and Raw Dogs and Other Metaphors from April Bratton. It was good to have you on.
Thanks, Frank. It was good to be on.
I'll probably see you in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you will.
All right, I gotta
close
out the show.
We'll come out and smoke a cigarette together.
All right, and go to the Badlands tomorrow. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was April Michelle Bratton. If you really want to get her stuff, you should, because she's one of the better writers that I know. You heard when the shit's coming out. If you don't know her and you're listening, you can find her on my Facebook page and find out all her links to all her stuff that's coming out. Next week, we'll be doing a show, our first overseas show. Jenny Fagan, I hope I'm saying her name right, Scotland. She'll be the guest next week on July 2nd. And then there will not be a show the following week because I will be in San Francisco reading with all those crazy people like Jason Harnung and William Taylor Jr. and Frankie Metro and Lynn Alexander and Tim Murray and Jason Neese and Aurora Kill Poet and Cappy Nunez is the same person. And like on and on. It's going to be an awesome thing. And I will mention it on next week's show because they'll probably all be partying. Because I don't arrive till the 3rd. But anyways, enjoy your beer. I hope you're drinking beer and not Mountain Dew. So what the hell ever.